Hello, welcome to the Lately in PHP podcast. I'm Manuel Lemos. This is episode number 20, and as always, I have here with me to discuss the latest of the most interesting topics that happen in PHP world. Hernani Joppert. Hello, Hernani. How are you doing?
Hello, Manuel. I'm glad to be back, and lots of things to talk as usual, and glad to be here.
Yes, that's great because I'm going to talk about several things that maybe you have a better insight regarding certain topics. But first, let's move on with the latest releases of PHP. PHP 5.4 will be released, it is expected to go out on February 2. We are recording this before of that date, but it may, by the time that people are listening to this podcast, they may have already been out. PHP 5.4, you already talked about its features. What are the main features that have been developed in the latest months? Yeah, it has gone through many release candidates, six so far, and the latest was released on January 24, RC6, and there is really nothing new because it's practically the last release candidate before the final. And but for those that probably were not being following this release of PHP 5.4, as far as I can remember, the main features are things like traits, which is a sort of form of implementing inheritance. Another feature is a built-in web server that will allow you to test your own PHP applications without relying on a separate web server like Apache or something else, and several other probably less important features. But for those that are always looking up for new versions, probably with performance enhancements, this will probably be a very interesting release. Well, probably the main question that people will be asking is whether they should upgrade to PHP 5.4 and benefit about all the enhancements, or maybe wait. Hernani, what do you think? Do you think it is something that people should wait for PHP 5.4 release a little while, or maybe they should just start trying using it? What
yes,
do you think?
Yeah, there will be a lot of nice things like the multi-bytes by default and other things that users can benefit from. But as usual, it's best to wait for some time until you have a mature release and lots of people using it, because vulnerabilities arise, and the better you have your environment. No, I guess it's safer in that sense.
Yes, I brought this up because, by the time we are recording, it is not yet out, but I plan to release an article talking about criteria that people should follow on deciding whether they should upgrade or not to PHP 5.4. Well, in my opinion, and this is a very personal opinion, not necessarily the opinion that everybody should follow. It depends on the situation of each developer. I think, as you said, I always recommend people to wait at least maybe 1 month. It's an arbitrary period, but it should be enough for at least the main bugs to be discovered and fixed. Despite PHP 5.4 has gone through a long release candidate process, in practice, what we notice is that there are always bugs that are only detected after the new version is exposed to the vast majority of the users, that actually give it a real try and eventually start reporting bugs that may be more serious and affect them most. And other than that, other than just bugs, it's very important also to notice that there will be eventually backward incompatibility changes. And and I'm sure.
Sorry, just to interrupt you, but yeah, in that sense of backward compatibility, people relying on frameworks, which is the thing we will talk about later on, is something that may be good or may be bad, because you are somehow limiting your usage of PHP if you are relied on a framework, a specific release, and that has to be tested yet and make sure that it works. Although it's a release candidate, a production version is way different than a development version.
Yeah. Because in reality, most people will not try anything else before official final releases. And as we have noticed before, I think it was 5.3.6 or 7 that had a bug. Not exactly a backwards incompatible change, but in any case, it's another reason for you to wait some time and be careful. I think for those that practice, at least to some degree, test-driven development, or if they do not practice, they have a minimal set of test scripts that evaluate if their code works. It's always good to run the tests before you actually decide to upgrade. Well, this is basic common sense, but some people do not really pay much attention to this. So in any case, I'll be releasing an article that will give more insights on this. But one important topic that we already mentioned is that new versions can always have new bugs, and bugs may or may not be related to security issues. And this is also a reminder about an important vulnerability that was found. Actually, it was found a long time ago, but only recently developers have been paying attention. It's a vulnerability that affects not just PHP, but many languages. And I even released an article that really got a very large audience, because it was security is always a topic that raises the attention of all developers, because nobody wants to be very vulnerable. In this case, this so-called hash table collision vulnerability can affect potentially millions of PHP servers, actually web servers that run PHP, and or other languages that also have this vulnerability. Nani, did you follow the repercussion of this announcement? Although it was not exactly new, it was still an announcement. What did you get from it?
Yeah, I've seen repercussions on social networks about this topic. There were lots of hot topics about it, and people trying to as well discuss evangelism between languages and implementations, etc. But yes, the concern is very critical. It may be old, but we are a information podcast here for targeting PHP developers.
Yeah.
And sometimes people don't have the time to read news. And
yeah,
sometimes people listen to podcasts on their car. So it's something that we, yeah, as a commitment here to the community.
Yeah. Actually, I was talking about the article that was published in the blog,
yeah,
PHP Chaos site. And
yes.
It is sort of one thing that you also notice, Hernani, is that it is amazing that some people were protesting because we are talking about it as if you should not make a big deal out of it.
Right.
Well, if there is a vulnerability that can bring your server down very easily, why not talk about it? And I don't know what those people that protest have in their heads, but everybody should know about this as soon as possible.
Yeah.
And they are complaining.
Later, at least the later, the better, right? Because
you mean the earlier, right?
Yeah, but if somebody doesn't have the time to read the news and later on they listen to this podcast, then we are here to address to those people. And sometimes we have an overload of information, especially if you are using Twitter and social networks like Facebook or etc. And you are working and you don't have the time to pay attention to that. And then you are relaxed at home and you're listening to the podcast, and then you are getting more a more richer content. Because we are discussing here about those topics. And yes, I've seen lots of people, not lots of people, but some people ranting about this article and the repercussions under some portals. And it's weird because people just brag about it as being old news, but they don't have the time to elaborate any useful answer about it.
Yeah.
It could be old news to him or to who the one who addresses it, but it could be new, something new to somebody else. And it's not them to be entitled to address this. And this is just a personal opinion.
Right. And it's not just that. I actually read, I think you read as well, people complaining because I was sort of making a big deal out of it. It's not a matter of making a big deal out of it. It's just a matter of telling people what they need to know as soon as possible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's true that it can affect millions of PHP servers. So why not put it in that way? It's interesting. Actually, it's amazing that some people, you're claiming just I was trying to attract audience, making it as if it was a sensationalist article.
No. Yeah. If we would talk about such things, any software isn't bug-free, at least that I know of. There are some of them which are very purists, like LaTeX language and etc. But even Oracle, which is a big software vendor, they've brought an ad, a very famous ad, which stated that the database was unbreakable. And then a guy, I guess, was in Russia or somewhere else, just broke the algorithm and was able to hack it. So imagine Oracle being a software vendor and a very, very professional database vendor, which has lots of systems relying on having that repercussion. And if Oracle wouldn't care about the vulnerabilities that they hold, imagine what the customers could complain.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and PHP being an open source solution, it's more susceptible for people checking the code and understanding the deeper whereabouts of the PHP engine itself.
Right.
And it's even more reliable because we have people checking things that could happen and trying to address it and solving bugs. But
right.
That can pass as well. And sometimes it happens, so we have to address it. That's public awareness that we are doing here.
Right, and like the guy that did the presentation on this vulnerability in that security event, one thing that he mentioned that above all languages, PHP is more representative because from what I was not aware of this number, but it seems that 77% of the web servers have PHP installed. So it's
right.
A lot of servers in the world to be targeted. And in the days when there are groups of people like Anonymous and others that can organize and use vulnerabilities to cause damage to whatever are the institutions they are against, if those institutions are not aware, they can easily exploit these vulnerabilities to cause them damage. And just a brief note, I'm not taking part of the merits of the people that perform those attacks. or not. I'm just saying that everybody that can be susceptible to be attacked should know. So it's never too much to spread the news about this vulnerability. And from the comments that we got in the blog post, many developers appreciated the being informed, because despite PHP 5.3.9 that provides a workaround to this vulnerability was released publicly, most people are not really paying attention to what exactly was this release about. And and one thing, by the way, talking about PHP 5.3.9, now talking about the actual workaround, it's not exactly a fix, it's a workaround. What it does is limits the number of the parameters that a request PHP will process in a request. For instance, if you get a GET or a POST request, the parameters that come with the request, if you get many parameters in the request with specific names, it may cause that PHP will start taking too much time processing those parameters, and this can bring down any server with just a few requests. It doesn't take denial of server, distributed denial of server attack to achieve this. A single person can cause a lot of damage to a vulnerable server if they do not have a way to protect against this. And what the article explained is that what you can do to prevent these attacks. One of the things is to upgrade to PHP 5.3.9 if you can. Some people can't because they are not using a server that the hosting company allows them somehow, in case they are not using a dedicated server or a virtual power private server. Either others can't upgrade because they do not have a patch from the provider of the server distribution they are using, and for those that cannot use upgrade actually to a newer version, one solution that I presented there is to use the Suhosin patch. I think it's the way to spell it, I'm not sure. That was developed by Stefan Esser, a respected security expert that is responsible for finding many of security vulnerabilities in PHP and other software projects. And many years ago, I think in 2004, he developed this extension for PHP that already implemented this limit of input variables that are sent to the HTTP requests handled by PHP, and that would be an alternative. Actually, I did not try that extension. I don't know if you can use it in more recent versions, because there are always changes in PHP extensions interfaces. But I think it can be at least a workaround, a way to prevent those attacks for older PHP versions. And also talk about PHP 5.4. Obviously, this new version, PHP 5.4, also has this new variable that you can use to protect against these eventual attacks. So, the article already gave enough information about that, and we are just here talking a bit more about this for those that for some reason may have not paid attention to the article. But I think we already said a lot about it, and we need to move on in this podcast. And I'm going to comment just a bit about an initiative that for those that follow the PHP Classes blog, they are aware, which is the PHP Zeitgeist. In this case, 2011 edition, which is basically an initiative very similar to the Google Zeitgeist, initiative. For those that are not familiar, basically it consists of gathering statistics about the searches that users have been doing more in 2011, at least compared with previous years. And this is a very interesting initiative, because it not only it gives us an idea about what people have been searching for, but also demand for things that people are still looking for, but they are not very good solutions. And there is an article that was published in PHP Classes site that analyzes the PHP Zeitgeist edition and just tries to elaborate a bit on what were the most relevant topics that have been searched, and for which there is a greater demand. And there was, in 2011. And I also noticed there were a few topics that actually a few keywords that seem to have grown in demand, but they are still unfulfilled, because this PHP Zeitgeist initiative, it's based on statistics of searches done on PHP Classes site. There are a few things about the probably components people are searching for which until now there are no components about those topics. Hernani, did you look into this article? Did you analyze the topics that were most relevant in 2011, and those that are still that represent searches for things that people are still looking for, but there are no results?
Oh yes, it's very, very positive to have such information. There were lots of things been implemented within the PHP during 2011. But yeah, Google is the information thing on the web. There are alternatives, but having such functionality like the PHP Zeitgeist, which is an idea took out from Google, that you made it, it's really, really useful for the community, and it's something that I read about it, and I really appreciate.
Right, and
it's also a public service representing about your users' behavior and the visitors of your site as well.
Right, exactly. I hope it also it can also be useful for people that are not exactly users at PHP Classes site, because it's despite there are many people that do not use the site. The number of users of the site is so high that this is representative of demands of PHP developers, things that they are looking for, and it can also be useful for other people, companies that are develop their own components and are not exactly related with the PHP Classes site, and they then can just come here, look at the statistics, they are public, and maybe take some hints about directions that their business should follow, probably to address needs of the PHP community. And other than that, I also would like to remind that just like this, there is this PHP Zeitgeist initiative, there is also the JavaScript Zeitgeist initiative, which is exactly the same, except that it is run on the jsclasses.org site. That is a very similar site to the PHP Classes site, except that is for JavaScript components. And since the site is already going to be 2 years of age, in the second year it is possible to have statistics that allow the site to compare past trends with recent trends and take some conclusions about what is new. So this year was the first that the JavaScript Zeitgeist was organized, and just like you can see what are what were the trends in the PHP world. You can also see what were the trends in the JavaScript world. And, well, if you are also interested in JavaScript, you can just go there. There is a link in the show notes that will allow you to find the exact pages that tell you about this initiative. And moving on with our podcast, I would like to comment on a different topic, I would say unusual topic. For those that are not familiar, there is this MicroPHP manifesto. I think it is an initiative launched by Ed Finkler, a well-known PHP developer, that, basically it looks to me like it is a rant against this trend to build very complex frameworks that get you buried in complex PHP development processes. And he rants about this for several reasons, and that he explains in a manifesto article. Hernani, did you look into this? What are your first thoughts about this when you looked into this?
Yeah, I've been reading it, and I thought it was funny, and it represents also a serious part. This is my solely single opinion. Yeah, sometimes depends how you want to implement things. Sometimes you have to follow coding guidelines, and you have to rely on things within the scope of the project that you are involved on. But sometimes you want to be simple, and it's also something in the past that Joel Spolsky, I guess, mentioned as well.
Right.
As the pragmatic programmer, which is a very, very famous blog post, which brings to the table how deeply you want to get your code ready, and how much resources, I mean human resources as well as financial resources and time resources, to allocate in order to have the code following all the frameworks and etc., benefiting from design patterns such as dependency injection and others, and in order to get something working.
Right.
There is a very old saying from a quote that I've seen recently, and it reminds me of that I guess Buddha mentioned, and I'm not related to any religion here, but he says an idea is not valid if it's not put in practice. So
yeah, well, it's a simple thought, but it's well thought.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you have an idea if it's not in practice. Sometimes you have to do the first release, and then you move on, and then you move forward. You can't just plan the latest Facebook architecture out of your single machine. It's something that it's really impossible, unless you have tons of virtual machines and time enough to set up everything, and you understand the process.
Right. Well, basically this manifesto, well, my interpretation of it seems to be a rant against people that make things even more complicated than they should be.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, he actually mentions explicitly Zen Framework, Symfony, or CakesPHP, because these are probably the most popular frameworks. And basically what he seems to be complaining is how complicated needs to be the code that you use to use those frameworks. You have to go through a learning process that, eventually it will be an investment.
Yeah, but it's not a short learning process, right? Sometimes.
Well, I don't know. I cannot speak for personal experience, because I do not use these frameworks in particular. I have my own components and. I think this is basically a complaint about what seems to be people that overdo the use of things that probably they learned in college, like design patterns. Design patterns are fine, There, you should follow the patterns because you don't want to reinvent the wheel. The problem is that sometimes people want to use tens of design patterns on things that do not need to be that complex. And in the end, they add so much complexity that projects that should take a very short time end up being complex. And take more time than they should, and all this boils down to the problem that sometimes all these developers that like to use all sorts of design patterns actually they push things to justify using design patterns just because they like. And this, I think, in my opinion, of course, this is a very personal opinion, is that what is wrong is that in college you learn all the design patterns and you sort of score if you know all the design patterns well. So your teachers value if you know as many design patterns as you can. The problem is that in the real world, pushing the use of design patterns and that make things more complicated, it's against the people, whoever is employing you. Because if you take more time to justify means to use more complex processes, who is paying is your boss. And if you are not making good use of the time that your boss is paying for, you are a liability, and you are actually wasting your boss's money. And in the end, it may not matter, because your projects will probably not be as efficient as they should be. They will be so complicated and will take much more time and money to maintain. In the end, the complication that you added to the project actually
doesn't pay the effort.
Yeah, it doesn't pay the effort and shows that unlike what you thought, you are not being very smart. Because an employee, if he's just working for a company, he's just there and making the company spend more money than they should on development or whatever. Is reducing the company profit. And my advice to all those people that probably will disagree, and I expect that some people will disagree, they try...
And they are free to disagree, right?
Right, of course, as always. And they should consider, if not possible in the near future, maybe in a longer term, try to build a business all by themselves, developing software using those processes that they use, the complicated frameworks, all forced design patterns, and they realize that the time passes and they are spending their own resources. And when they are spending their own resources, I mean money, salaries, or whatever you are investing, they are realizing they are acting against themselves. And all this to say that people should be pragmatic. Like you said, you quoted Joe Spolsky, which is a very respected professional on the software development world. I do not exactly agree everything he says, but in this case, I remember he commented something about test-driven development.
Yeah.
Well, test-driven development is great in the ideal world. And if you can, you should have at least a minimum set of tests. For instance, for things like I just commented before, like testing your project in a newer PHP version to see if there are backwards incompatible changes.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that your life should revolve around tests. Tests are very resource expensive. You take a lot of time to do them. And if you are not a person that actually enjoys to write tests, it will be even worse, because you will be not so motivated, because it's not really as much fun as writing code that just works and provides an immediate result. And I remember that Joe Spolsky sort of ranted about this. Because
against Bob... from Object Mentor. I don't remember his full name.
Yeah, I remember it was something like that. And the truth is, Joe Spolsky is a business owner. He knows that, I suppose he doesn't program anymore these days, but I suppose that if he realizes that one employee is wasting his time about things that are not productive and are great in the ideal world, but are not really necessary in the real world, he probably go after that and make the developer rethink the approach and do it in a way that is more efficient, takes less time, and gets results, reliable results. It's very important to get reliable results. That's why I mentioned have a minimum set of tests. And also commenting about tests, you should have tests for things that are critical. If you do not have time for developing tests for everything, like some people want to promote, do it for things that are critical, like things like the deal with money, or deal with other people's lives, things that may hurt your business if they break. And this should be your main criteria. I mean, in my opinion, Hernan, what do you think about this?
Yeah. That's a clear, concise opinion, and I totally agree with it. I just wanted to make two observations. And one is related with the rant with Joe Spolsky, and I remembered his name is Uncle Bob Martin from Object Mentor. It's also a very, very famous software developer and consultant, wrote some books, etc. And he has history on the Agile community.
Right.
It's Agile methodologies are really bound to succeed in bigger projects, you know, where you have to be organized and everybody has to have the common sense of things. And the code has to be clean. And in order to be clean, you have some learning curve in order to adjust your code to the following framework. And this takes time. And but in the sense, it's a bigger team. So you have to spend this time in order to have everybody in sync.
Exactly.
But in the internet world, where we see lots of startups coming up, sometimes you don't have the time. And the sooner you're on your blue ocean, right?
Yeah.
From the blue ocean strategy, the better. And you have to.
Well, if you are not in a blue ocean, it is even worse because you have competitors biting your business.
Yeah. So this is something that sometimes is not very very crucial. And the other observation that I would like to talk about is regarding the common sense. When you said you're spending your employer's money, so spend it wisely and do things right in order to provide results, and the better and the sooner you have to balance out things, and that's my point.
Yeah, exactly. Well, people should realize that when they are working for their employees, they are their teachers that teach them to use many design patterns. And I'm not ranting against design patterns. I think you should follow design patterns, but only apply those that make sense to each contest, context.
Sometimes it's very cool, you know, to be involved into bytecode instrumentation. It's a partial thing of Java, which handles objects in memory and
all those hype trends. When talking about hype, I've just realized that there is a recent hype in the PHP world talking about, actually you mentioned it before, about dependency injection. I think it's what you meant. There are a few people that are commenting, oh, dependency injection, this and that one. Well, dependency injection is just one of many design patterns that you may use or not depending on the context. By the end of the day, you may look cool to your friends if you say, oh, I use dependency injection. But for your boss, it doesn't matter. And for your customer's boss, which are those that pay your boss or boss's money, even matter less because they do not see any programming at all. It may matter to your teacher in college when you learned about all those design patterns because it was his goal to teach you good practices. But if you got the idea that you should use more design patterns and force, make excuses to use more design patterns than you need, really need, you really miss something about that. Well, yeah. that's basically my opinion. Yeah. I'm sure this is an open subject. And,
And I just have to add one thing. If the listeners of this podcast have seen the movie Pirates of Silicon Valley, and I don't want to spoil anything, so if you do, just fast forward a little bit. I'll give you the time to do so. But yeah, if you don't want to miss the fun, go ahead and skip it. But if you do, once you listen about it, so Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, they confront each other. And Steve Jobs just says, my system is way better. And Bill Gates just replies, I don't care. Because Bill Gates had to build it in time in order to be competitor against Apple at that stage. So, you know, Windows suffers a lot of things on architecture, which I don't like the registry system. It's right. Something which is not necessary, in my opinion.
I'm sure that will give another topic for another podcast, but we need to move on. Anyway, this is an open topic, I'm sure, and anybody that is interested to comment, give your point of view, or maybe agree or disagree, doesn't matter, as long as it is a genuine point of view, feel free to post a comment to this podcast. But unfortunately we're getting to the end of this podcast, and we still have a couple of regular sections to move on. Starting from the latest classes published in JS classes, I just want to make a brief comment on the fact that we are seeing an increase in the number of contributions, which is very positive. This is sort of a consequence of an initiative that was launched in last month, and it was working very well. It's basically for those that are not following. There is now a report that is sent to authors that contribute to the PHP classes site and also to the JS classes site, because it's the same code, which gives authors tips on how they can improve their contributions and get a greater visibility and eventually get a greater recognition and feedback from the users. And this is working fairly well. And as I mentioned, there is an increase in the number of packages that is being published. And for that, I would like to apologize to all authors that have submitted packages, mainly to PHP classes site, because it's more popular. And their packages were not yet approved. I can only approve a few every day. And if your package was submitted and was not yet approved, please be patient. We'll get there. But moving on with the latest JavaScript classes published in JS classes site, Hernani, which ones do you like to comment?
Yes, I'll be brief on that because we are on a short time here. So my vote goes to Michel Prignalo from Italy. He did an object here which is named Reforma Box, and basically it helps resizing page elements by dragging the corner, which can be very, very visually appealing, and I do like visual resources a lot.
Yeah, actually, nowadays most browsers already sort of implement this on text area inputs.
Oh, yeah.
That allows you to expand in case you feel that it's very short, and it is very useful. But this jQuery plugin that Michele sent is for use on any type of page elements. So kudos for him for sending this plugin. I'm sure it will be very useful. Any other class you would like to mention?
Oh, yes. I was going to state just that it can be helpful to resize any elements, and it could be very nice if you do have limitations and you want to customize views for the users. And the other one is the SQLite query. Basically, it's a database driver, and you can perform queries under SQLite, which is very useful, especially for mobile developers, which is a more mobile-centric database. But it proves that JavaScript has come to a very, very mature state, and I would like to address this vote for Tom Schaefer from Germany.
Right. Actually, this could be used in on any environment on which the SQLite database is available. Actually, this is an abstraction. It's not specific. It's not. There is a driver for SQLite, but it's not specific. The API itself is not specific. It just there is code to help you build common SQL queries. There is a SQLite driver, and despite this, SQLite is sort of going out of. It's no longer being supported as a standard for browsers as a SQL database. Some browsers supported it, but they all agreed to not follow this route. But since this is a driver, since this is an abstraction layer with drivers, it can any future developments for to support other approaches, even if they do not provide a SQL interface, can use this package by using some driver to a newer database. Well, on my part, I would like to also comment on a couple of objects for different reasons. One is yet another plugin, jQuery Photo Wall, by Andrei Nikishaev. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name right. He's from Ukraine, and this is his first class. It is published in the JS Classes site, but he has been a long-time contributor at PHP Classes site, so kudos for him for also contributing to this site.
And this one has a very nice wall, a picture, a very, very nice picture with some nice pictures there.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I was going to comment about that because sort of raises... I just realized it when I recorded the Lately in JavaScript podcast because I did not notice it in first. There are some pictures that are sort of... erotic.
Mature content-wise.
maybe that's the soft way to put it. But there is sort of a misunderstanding. This object, just what it does is basically to show you a wall of pictures, eventually of different sites, different sizes. And what it seems to do is very similar to what Google Image Search does in presenting many pictures styled on a wall of pictures. And just because Andre used as an example of a gallery, image gallery that he developed, it contains some pictures that some people found to be a bit, I would say, probably too intense. But, well, this is art. People should not take it with the wrong impression. Anyway, I think this is very useful. And the other object that I also want to comment is Snow by Arthur Sossins, the current top contributor of the JS Classes site, and also a good contributor of the PHP Classes site. Basically, this is very interesting. Actually, this is a very simple snow falling effect, but the good thing about it is that it uses the accelerator titanium API for that can be used to develop applications, native applications for mobile phones of different architectures like iOS and Android, I think BlackBerry. And for those that are not familiar with Titanium, it's basically, I would say, a framework that allows you to use JavaScript, HTML5, and CSS to develop native applications that can be run on different types of mobile, and not only mobile, but mainly mobile devices. And so kudos for Arthur Sossins for sort of starting this section on accelerated titanium components. I'm sure he is ready to get to send a few more. But
oh, yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, it's very active, and it's great to have good participants like him. And I mentioned that he's a top contributor to the JS Classes site, but because of that initiative that I mentioned before, the encouraging authors, this week he was not the first of the authors with most of the users downloading his packages. You mentioned Michele Prigallo is the number one of the last week because he sent several components that were also well appreciated. And this is just an healthy, implicit competition that should not be taken too seriously, but in the end what results in the several people sending very interesting components. But
yeah, and now, soon you may also implement the Innovation Award as well, right?
Well, I hope so. The sooner you get a good basis of JavaScript components, I can launch this initiative. There are many sponsors waiting in the line to participate, to expose their products and give them away as prizes. But talking about the Innovation Award, let's move on to the latest components nominated to the Innovation Award that were released in November. They were voted in December, and then in January the announcement of the winners came out. And then which ones do you think that are more worth being mentioned?
Oh yes, I would vote for the NGOI PayPal payments library.
Oh right,
it seems to be a very extensive library here, from what I see, and it helps lots of applications which the author has listed here.
Yeah.
By the way, the author name is he's from US. His name I can't follow. Andrew Angel.
That's why yes, NGOI PayPal payments.
Oh yeah. So it's a very extensive library, and I see lots of sites using it already for donations. Yeah. And
well, but there's actually a reason for that. That is the reason why it was nominated as innovative, because there are many PayPal components, and but this one is the first that uses the PayPal adaptive payments library. Adaptive payments API. Of PayPal. For those that are not familiar, this is a new possibility that PayPal implemented, which basically allows you or anybody that is selling products, services in sites to define how the money that is received is shared between different
PayPal accounts.
Vendors. They should have PayPal accounts. Let's imagine that you have a site that is reselling products from another company. You, using this API, you can determine that a certain percentage of the payment goes to another account, and another part goes to your account. I think
which could be good for a shared blog, right?
It could be for any site that is reselling products of other people, and since the share of the original vendor goes directly to his account, he doesn't have to pay additional PayPal fees.
Oh, very nice.
And that is why it was mentioned, That is the reason for this class to be nominated. Hernani, what would be another class that you would like to also mention?
Oh yes, this one is the winner for this contest. It's from Richard Kaiser from the Netherlands, and Richard has been provided lots of components here with a quality code, and this one is the far. It's far beyond from what I've seen here, and it combines both JavaScript and PHP and sockets, and it does 100% PHP built-in uploader mechanism, and it seems to be very, very useful, and it is a cross-browser compatible component, so it's something very, very nice.
Right. Well, this is basically a solution for a difficult problem, which is how to handle uploads and be able to show progress to the upload to users, and in this case he uses an interesting scheme that basically consists of implementing a web server that will take the upload requests in parallel. And this is a non-trivial development, and kudos for Richard for yet another great class. And other than that, on my case, I have actually also picked a couple of classes to comment. One is called Tor, and for those, I'm not sure if I already mentioned that before, but Tor is a network that allows sites to users to access sites and other network resources by basically anonymizing the requests. And the problem is that in some cases it causes problems to certain sites because they cannot take requests of users without being able to track their origin. And with this class, it is possible to know if a certain IP address that is accessing a site is from is using the Tor network. This class was contributed by Alexander Hover from Germany. And at least for these purposes that I have been mentioning, I think it is very useful. Well, other than that, I also like to comment a class for image manipulation named GD2 Imaging by Artur Graniszewski. Well, I'm not sure if this is the right way to spell his name. I hope I'm not spelling it too far from the correct spelling. And well, basically, what this class does, well, there are many classes that can use different image manipulation effects, but in this case this does several unusual effects, and they are implemented in PHP, like detecting the color of the background color of an image, detect and deskew an image if for some reason it was skewed by, eventually it was scanned in the it was not in the right alignment, it can deskew it, and so on. Several other non-trivial effects that Arthur implemented in this class. So kudos also for him for this great class. And well, as I said, the number of classes contributed to PHP classes has been increasing, and I hope next month, actually I don't hope, I'm sure the next month we have even more great classes to talk about. Well, we are basically at the end of this podcast. I would just like to thank again Hernani for coming to this podcast. And I don't know if you have some final remarks, but for me, that's all for now.
That's all for now for me as well, Manuel. It has been very nice. Thanks for inviting me here and keeping me here. And I really appreciate to be part of this and to be part of the community in a sense.
Okay, bye.
Thank you, bye-bye.